to interview session two with General Welling.
I, going back a little, back in Pearl, and my concern about the development of the support was when it became clear that we were going to be in a very serious position at Iwo, I went to see Holly Mad Smith, who was Smith's titular superior in this affair, but General Smith held the position, and properly, that this was a core show, and that his intervention, significant intervention in the planning, was not indicated.
Well, he was in a difficult position anyway. He was superimposed over the operation as Expeditionary Troops Command. And I think this was done because of Kelly Turner's the fact that Kelly Turner was going to be there, sort of superimposed over.
That's right.
Who was the Amphibious Force Commander for this?
Harry Hill had the
Harry Hill.
D-Day thing. But, of course, the preliminary bombardment was bland, and Turner wasn't present for that, but he was present for the D-Day affair. Well, going back a little bit then, General Smith had taken the position that there was no use of his staff mucking around in this business. It was a Corps problem and could be solved by the Corps. But I was so concerned about the thrust of the, what I considered the inadequate support, which was a table, that I finally went over to see the General, and General Smith. And I prepared a page and a half memorandum in which I predicted that the most serious casualties of the Marine Corps had ever in any operation, and extending over a longer period of time, would probably result in less. Some, unfortunately, General Smith was in the hospital at the time, but when he came back, as a matter of fact, I went over to see him even, and I know he did what he could push this thing, but he was in the hospital, and it was pretty late. But he did tell me, he said, I want you to send me a dispatch on the 90-day, giving your estimate of whether we can land or whether we can't. That is to say, can we make the operation good? Which called for really an assessment of what had been done in the 3 days. And so as soon as we direct operations were over, I sat down with the intelligence people and the ship's reports, and for several hours we pored over them and tried to see where we stood as far as destruction was concerned. And finally, about midnight, I cranked out this dispatch, which I said that the landing could be made. The casualties would be heavy, but we could do it. Which was a pretty heavy responsibility for me, I must say. I certainly was, a lot of soul searching went into that thing. And of course the landing was made. I myself transferred to the Harry Hill's amphibious flagship, who was actually conducting the operation, the ship-to-shore movement. And his flagship was the headquarters for the gunnery support operation. So I moved over and manned the, because of my knowledge of the plan, tacitly, Admiral Hill accepted me wearing the command circuit phones, you know, you had it. And because I knew the plan, and I knew every ship involved, and his own gunnery officer didn't know it that well, and I could answer a question over the phone without any looking at any paper or anything else. Well, of course, the landing went on. The left flank division, the 5th Division, whose area had been worked on by the Nevada and the California, had a very significant elimination of the blockhouses and pillboxes in their area. insofar as their advance, they were on their objective very rapidly. The rowing barrage worked fine. We modified it a number of times based on the reports from the air observers who were charged with this. We had a split phone with one airplane in one ear and one in another, with a guy just chattering this out all the time, and we just directed the destroyers to repeat series B for X minutes, and we were able to keep this control going. Now, on the, as I say, the left flank, no great problems. Casualties, of course. The fire from Suribachi, the base of Suribachi, not too bad. On the other hand, the right flank was another story. The Japanese had not been, they had more commanding ground all the way up to airfield number two up in the Senator area, commanded the landing area. They had a variety of weapons back up in there that we hadn't even touched. We knew we hadn't touched them. We concentrated on the on putting a hole in the line, hoping we could open up the backfield later. This is the price we paid in concentrating ships. And of course, the story is well known. It's been repeated millions of times, the monographs and everything else. There's no point going into it, except that the 4th Division had a very rough time, particularly the right flank. Chambers Battalion lost a shore fire control party immediately. He wasn't able to call for fire direct until sometime later. Heavy casualties, sort of touch and go. This is all the record. There's nothing new about this. Well, I can go on here, and I can be very short and sweet from here on. The story of the subsequent operations is well known. Our failure to take out the defenses commanding the beaches from further inland resulted, as you know, in more casualties in days subsequent to D-Day, up through 7 or 8, as I recall, than we had on D-Day. This can, of course, be attributed in large part to, let me put it this way, had we had even another day, gunfire, like any firepower, is cumulative. You have a sort of a flat curve for the first day or two, but then your effects begin to go up very rapidly. So a fourth day would have been out of all proportion. It would have been more than 25% increased effectiveness. So it was really a shame that we didn't get a little more time. We could have saved a lot of lives.
Is there any recrimination afterwards?
Okinawa kind of overcame it.
The Navy, as you know, gave the argument, and I've written this in my book based on material that I made available. I did some investigating of it to show the development of naval gunfire during the war, that because it culminated in this problem at Iwo. The Navy said that based on the ammunition supply ships and the load that the ships were carrying, that they delivered the equivalent of more than 3 days fire within that 3 days, number one. And number two, that an overriding factor in not allowing the gunfire ships to remain was the fact that they needed to go with the fast carrier task forces to bombardment of Tokyo and Tokyo's environs to protect the flanks of Iwo, to protect the landing, and also as preliminary operations to Okinawa, which seems to me where it might have some validity was still begging the question as far as...
Well, there wasn't any question that the fast carrier task forces had to have the fast battleships certainly poking their head up into that nest. Didn't turn out, as I recall, and I'm not an expert on it, to be as serious as it had been thought it might be. And I could understand the fast carrier, the fast battleship, but...
You had the old battleship group, though, too.
Yeah.
Ohlendorf's group, I think.
Well, there are the...
Dale had...
Put it simply this way, I never could quite understand why it would have been, among other things, would have been feasible to have the support force accompanied by an AE, an ammunition ship. We could have done some replenishing. God knows we shot and shot for 28 days later with heavy ships replenishing on a regular basis right in the area. The support afterward, after the operation, was superb in those areas where gunfire could be effective. And heavy ships remained on station and continued to support our landing right up until it no longer could be utilized effectively. I, of course, was not party to the exact resource availability, but it was always in my mind that ammunition could have been put into the area, and nobody really, you know, as far as I can recall at this point, ever really disputed this. There had never been a preliminary bombardment longer than 3 days. I think the maximum was 2, except at Guam by complete happenstance. But at Guam, they 13 days of bombardment, preliminary bombardment operating as a result of the delay in the landing on Guam, the ammunition problem was handled. My own view is that the Navy was not convinced of the need.
Did any of the Navy files later say to you that you were right? Did anyone in the Navy admit that they were wrong?
Yep. Admiral Blandy's gunnery officer. I want to implicate Jack Taylor, really. I think he tacitly agreed. I think he'd agreed in part that something more was needed from the very beginning. But I don't think he had the latitude to take such a position. I was loyal to his boss, and that he should be. Well, it wasn't enough. It was a unique problem. It was the real fortress in the Pacific as compared with anything else. Palau might have been comparable. I'm not familiar enough with Palau to know, but the Mariana is certainly nothing to touch you.
Well, I don't think in Palau that the beach was pretty well smashed, and I don't think no amount of naval gunfire could have aided in reducing those ridges, bloody Three Sisters, Bloody Nose Ridge, and so on, because what called for high angle fire, what really was required later was close air support, taking off from the field and bombing the ridges.
There was nothing. One tended to go in patterns in the war. You had 2 days at preliminary at the Mariana. It just wasn't the recognition of the unique nature of Iwo Jima as compared with the other objectives we had. And it was unique. Because I subsequently, in Marine Corps school, I made a study of every gunfire assault that we made, and I got fairly familiar with what intelligence had been available, and subsequent intelligence showing what was available, what to the Japanese. There was not a landing ever made anywhere that even came anywhere near close to Iwo.
No, it was unique. There's no question about it, the nature of the island.
It was a fortified position, the whole island. And the taking of the damn thing, really, you have to look on this as being like taking a hunk of a major or fortified position from the sea. And brother, this takes some doing. Now, I do want to make one point. We got to separate the technical capability of the individual firing ship here from the staff assessment of the overall requirement. These ships, by and large, had gotten real good. They were superb instruments by this time. The California and the Tennessee and the New York and the Nevada, those four ships which sat off that beach and shot all day long, and really knew what they were up doing. And those destroyers that fired over the heads of our troops, when you think of all the things that could have gone wrong in that, when you think of the individual feats of the little ships, the destroyers. I remember one destroyer supporting the 5th Division on the left flank, in no way called upon to do what they did, running in and with their 40-millimeter and taking stuff under fire, which they picked up, putting themselves in real jeopardy. There can be no question about the technical competence of the U.S. Navy in the execution of gunfire support. Like anything the Navy really, when they really get down and try to do it, they can be absolutely technically superb. And there wasn't anything they would do to support the Marines ashore. You never had. I never heard of an instance in which ships didn't do all that was in their power and more to support the troops ashore. So we always have to remember that. It shouldn't, this story of an inadequate appraisal of requirement shouldn't be allowed to really take away from the overall recognition by the Navy and the superb achievements of these ships in carrying out this rather difficult and somewhat esoteric kind of operation, something you've got to give them high credit for.
Well, it boils down to the fact that there have not been personalities involved, and had the requirement been there for the ships to lay on a 10-day preliminary bombardment, that there's no question but they would have done it, and
done it beautifully. Yeah. Beautifully.
What about the LCI gunships and rocket ships? Did you have to, you planned for that also, did you not?
No. This was a completely Navy planned operation.
Were they effective at all?
Oh, for the purpose of neutralization, probably some minor effect. But when you've got people in pillboxes with overhead cover and where a direct hit on an aperture is required with a light caliber, and with the tenaciousness of the Japanese is against a weak foe, yes, you might have neutralized. This stuff was of course of some utility, but the requirement for the preliminary was destruction. That's what we wanted done. D-Day, you're in the neutralization business. You hope you've gotten them. Kind of here and there, maybe you may be able to detect a weapon which you can take under direct fire and eliminate. But
had the Japanese not opened up on the UDT units, it would have been murder. You never would have, you would never have discovered these.
I think it'd been touch and go. Sitting on them. Here's the beach. Here they are, right on the right flank of the beach. Major caliber, in case major. You couldn't have touched them with anything the landing force had except bazookas, flamethrowers. That meant closing. And in the meantime, they've got these boats to shoot at. Now, one strange thing about the Japanese plan. In spite of the intense boat concentration, most of the fire was directed at the beach. Now, whether those guns would have... I don't think those guns would have, because those were the ones that opened up on the LCIs. So the fact that they thought, of course, there was a landing in progress. looked pretty real to them. 12 LCIs abreast, and they had to think that.
Of course, Japanese, after Peleliu, Japanese strategy, defensive strategy, had changed. But here you have one exception.
I don't think it really changed for Iwo. I think it had definitely changed for the Okinawa show.
Yes, it did. Definitely.
We know because we had the
went ashore with the
testimony of the Japanese commander that he had deliberately wanted to get the Marines involved with his close-in defenses where gunfire and air support would be less effective because of safety. Kuribashi, I remember his quote very well.
For Okinawa?
Yeah.
Ushijima.
Yeah.
Kuribayashi was...
He was the evil thing.
Well, as one who was at Okinawa, I tell you, it was quite a surprise.
Yeah.
A pleasant surprise. But, I think that you talked earlier about the reticence of the gunfire support ships closing with the targets until Admiral Conley led the way. Didn't that go back to the old concept of...
Yeah, there was still that.
That 10,000-yard
distance. That's still that lingering, somewhat of a lingering concept, but of course they... Well, once the direction was given, and once Admiral Blaney said, get in there now and let's go, there wasn't any more problems. The first day's operation had called for a slowly closing range, you see. Well, Admiral Blaney thought they were too slow in slowly closing the range, you see. And, of course, no one knew what the Japanese might do. And they had extensive coast artillery defenses there, which could have significantly damaged some of the ships.
And you didn't know that from the aerial photo?
Oh, yes, we knew that. We knew that there was a four-gun battery at the foot of Shorbashi. We knew that there was another four-gun battery over on the right flank. We knew that there were other coast defense batteries there, and we knew they could, of course, fire at the ships. We knew that. What we didn't know was what was on that right flank little ridge of bluff, where we carried two anti-tank guns and the G2, and where, in fact, these had probably gone in very early, before the detailed aerial photography was.
Were you getting any color photos, any Sony strips? And that coming about yet?
I didn't see any, but we got superb verticals and obliques.
How about, did you get any submarine photos?
Yeah, we had some photos. I can't remember just what proportion, but we had some.
Because the submarine photos would have given you a good...
We had some good low-level obliques of the beach. And we could see those rock houses had been finished. They were just mounds of sand. You see, the technical problem here for the ships was they were shooting at a mound of sand. And they had to get a direct hit on that mound and blow the sand away before they could see where, so they could get at the block house. Now, once they did, and they did this, and they would hit, blow the sand away, then about that time, and out of some of them, the Japs would start to go, spilling out of both sides of the block house. 40 millimeter people took care of them. Then they'd go to work with a projectile, again, try to get a direct hit against the blockhouse, and just, of course, with a high capacity. They were using high capacity, not armor piercing, because they didn't need armor piercing. We were talking about 3 to 5 foot concrete reinforced, and the high capacity would deal with this from the heavy caliber. So you were just putting a hole in this goddamn thing and blowing it out and making it inoperative.
Yeah, is it a fair assessment of the 5th Corps staff that they didn't share your pessimism and concern about this?
Not until pretty late in the game.
They're pretty optimistic.
You're not on now. I think you have to recognize that, in spite of the fact that the gunfire for Iwo, the preliminary gunfire, was inadequate, and there can be no question about that, it was, that the performance by such people as Admiral Connolly and clearly recognized in the last 2 o'clock,
oh good,
Tarawa, and adapting techniques right away, on his own pretty much. People of that ilk with a lot of imagination. And of course, as I said, the ships themselves, a superb performance. So while there was this mistake, it can be nothing but a mistake, a lack of a certain calculation that the gunfire support was achieved results which nobody could have ever really thought back in the days when we were fiddling around in the Caribbean and trying to develop capabilities. It outscored anything I ever had in mind by quantum amount. It was truly, I suppose, along with a lot of the other amphibious techniques, but I just have to feel that the naval gunfire support, which was achieved, was just absolutely so far beyond anything anybody had any mind that it might do. Of course, we were in a new business. So all we'd done is theorize about amphibious operations. Then when the Navy put its mind to it and harnessed the gunnery capabilities of these ships, we really went somewhere.
What about the problem? I don't know that it occurred during Iwo. I think it may have occurred at Guam and certainly at Okinawa, the requirement to impose plans Victor and Negat on artillery and naval gunfire to protect the aircraft. And I know that Toots Henderson made a comment, said, my God, the possibility of a plane being shot down and through this by either naval gunfire or artillery was so infinitesimal that the pilots ought to take their chances just like the ground people.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with Toots 100%. The ground people aren't asked to take chances from their own fire too much. I think probably that we went a little too far, leaned over a little too far in restrictions. I think some restrictions were fundamental for nothing else than morale purposes. The Vietnam War, I understand that there's been a certain lightening of this kind of requirement. But I think probably that those restricted fire plans did go a little far, but you had to have something, I think. I don't believe you could. I think they leaned over backwards a little. Didn't bother us much on Iwo, really. We didn't have much air support for Iwo.
It was pretty rudimentary, too, I guess. McGee had the Lefascu.
Yeah.
And, well, we've gone through here. Let's see, what's...
Well, we're pretty well over whatever story I got to give you, because the rest of it... There's nothing unique in any experience that I've had, and I will take another session and review this, but the only unique thing that you get out of me is this intimate involvement I had with the gunfire business.
That's for this period.
I could talk I could have maybe something useful to say about the 116 chore I had as when I was in the third division, which was a rather unique sort of thing. And but I can work up.
Shall we end the session now?
Yeah, let's call it quick. I don't know whether this thing is.